I'm standing at Rockaway Beach in Pacifica. It's on the California coast, just south of San Francisco. And the view is stunning. From where I'm standing, I can see sheer cliffs and a long swatch of sandy beach. There are tide pools where the beach meets the bluffs on either side of the cove, and they're full of seagrass, hermit crabs, and anemones. To the casual eye, it looks like a healthy ecosystem. But what's under the waves is a different story. Not just here, but almost anywhere you go in the state. Under the surface and just a short way out is an entire ecosystem that most people never see. California's kelp forests. Like their land counterparts, they have thick canopies on the surface and layers in the water beneath. The kelp is tall, sometimes up to 90 feet from ocean floor to surface. Seen from below, it almost looks like a kelp cathedral. The kelp rises in leafy columns and it's mostly dark, except where a stray sunbeam pierces the water. These kelp forests are incredibly important places for biodiversity. The kelp, which can grow 2 feet a day, is a food source for many undersea animals. Kelp forests support a wide range of species of fish, invertebrates, birds, and marine mammals, and they offer safety for creatures that hide among the stalks. In these underwater biomes, you can find California's state fish, the bright orange Garibaldi. Seals and sea lions play in them. Sea otters need them to thrive. They are one of the world's most productive ecosystems. And over the last 8 years, they have all but disappeared. Where once there were rich underwater forests teeming with life, now, in most places, there is nothing but bare rock carpeted in spiny purple urchins. In fact, the Northern California coast has lost more than 95% of its kelp forests in the last 8 years. I wanted to find out more about what happened, so I talked to Joshua Smith. He's a PhD candidate at UC Santa Cruz, where he studies different sea species. He started in 2012, right before the collapse of California's kelp forests.
I remember going out in Monterey Bay to do dive surveys, and in many places the kelp had grown all the way to the surface of the ocean, and it had spread out so dense at the surface that we couldn't even get our dive boat into the place where we needed to do our surveys. I mean, there was just a lot of kelp in 2012. And shortly after that, though, in the year 2013, is when things began to rapidly change.
The change in 2013 actually had very little to do with the kelp itself, but it shows just how interconnected the ocean really is. And it starts with an animal you may have encountered at the beach, the sea star.
Starting in the year 2013, we had this sea star catastrophe. There was this wasting syndrome that completely decimated sea stars up and down the coast.
That's right, sea star wasting syndrome. When sea stars get the wasting disease, they die over days or weeks. Their arms twist grotesquely. They develop lesions over their bodies. Their limbs deflate, stretch like taffy, and fall off. Eventually, they melt away completely. Sea star wasting syndrome isn't a new phenomenon. California had multiple outbreaks between the 1970s and the 1990s. But those events pale in comparison to the one that began in 2013. That one hit roughly 20 species of sea star from Baja California to the northern Gulf of Alaska. It pushed some to the brink of extinction. Scientists aren't sure what causes it, but they know it's exacerbated by warming water. Smith says the loss of the sea stars threw the environment out of balance, especially one species called the sunflower sea star.
This is a sea star that can grow to be about the size of an extra large pizza. They have over 20 arms, and they just cruise around the reef eating just about everything. But they're predators. So they eat all sorts of things. They eat snails, other mollusks, and they especially like to eat sea urchins. And sea urchins are the other key player in the story.
Sea urchins are spiky sea creatures that live on the ocean floor. They look like small purple hedgehogs rolled tight into a ball and covered in bristling spines. More than anything, they love to eat kelp.
So starting in the year 2013, once the sea star wasting disease hit, the urchins no longer had one of their key predators.
So, fewer sea stars to eat urchins meant a lot more urchins eating kelp. And then, as if that wasn't bad enough, one of the worst marine heat waves ever recorded hit the Pacific coast in 2014. Dubbed the Blob, the marine heat wave filled the North Pacific and blanketed 1,000 miles of coast with warm water. It raised the ocean temperature an average of 7 degrees Fahrenheit. It wreaked havoc on the ocean and decimated populations of fish, birds, and sea mammals. Many have yet to recover. Scientists say the blob was likely caused by climate change, and that we're likely to see more new ones. Indeed, we've actually already seen one since. While kelp can survive warmer waters, its growth is stunted. With fewer predators, the sea urchin population exploded. And with less kelp to go around, they spread far and wide in search of food.
They started storming around the open reef, actively looking for any other kelp that they could find just to gobble up. And so up and down the coast from Mendocino and Sonoma down to the central coast of California, we saw these widespread sea urchin outbreaks where the urchins in many places had eaten everything. All of the kelp and the other macroalgae that attaches to the reef, the urchins had eaten. And we call these places sea urchin barrens. And underwater, it just looks like a carpet of purple. And on the north coast of California, up in Mendocino and Sonoma, we saw hundreds of kilometers of total kelp deforestation.
Instead of kelp cathedrals, there was just nothing but urchins. John Holcomb has seen this firsthand as well. He's been diving commercially for nearly half a century, so he's seen a lot of change in the kelp forest over the years.
Over the last 30 years, 33 year on the North Coast, I've watched it come and go. Some years, 3, 4, 5 years in a row, it's just like a mat. You could walk across it. But there were areas the kelp didn't come back in. And there were areas the urchins didn't come back in. You didn't really notice, except, you know, Jesus, another bad kelp year. And then when I swam in 2015, I was stunned to see what had happened.
The hundreds of square miles of kelp forest along the coast hadn't just come back weaker or come back smaller. It hadn't come back at all. And in its place, there was a nearly lifeless reef. So looking at the scale of the problem, the question is, what do we do about it? Climate change has already fundamentally altered the natural systems of the ocean, and its effects have compounded in California's kelp forest in ways that seem difficult to address. Getting to this point wasn't a simple matter. The way out, if there is one, won't be either. Scientists and divers have proposed a lot of solutions to save the kelp forests.
We're basically trying to get success in any way we could.
That's Nancy Caruso, a marine biologist. She spent 10 years rehabilitating giant kelp forests in Southern California, and that was before the current collapse. Caruso and her team tried all sorts of things to get the kelp back on the reefs.
We grew the kelp on little pieces of bathroom tile. We also tried growing the kelp on ropes, on pieces of plastic.
Caruso says that results were mixed and success was varied. Kelp is surprisingly finicky. Its male and female spores need to find each other in the water, but they don't travel very far, and the kelp won't grow if the spores don't land on the right kind of bed. Despite all this, they kept trying.
We could take those spores and manipulate them, put them on whatever surfaces we wanted to so that we could grow them in these classroom laboratories, and then take that kelp on the tile or the rope or the whatever we put it on and outplant that in the ocean, tie it to the reef or string it up until it gets bigger and starts to grow onto the reef naturally. And so it is kind of a process that starts off microscopic, and then giant kelp can grow very quickly, as you probably heard, up to 2 feet a day in ideal conditions. So once we would get it into the ocean, it would take off and grow gangbusters.
Caruso says that after a decade of hard work, she and her team restored about 42 miles of coast. On the one hand, that's an incredible success. On the other hand, it brings home the disheartening scale of the problem, because California has lost hundreds of miles of kelp forest in the last few years. Caruso now leads an environmental organization in Orange County called Get Inspired. Seeing what happened to Northern California kelp forest after 2013, she says she had to take action.
I was watching all this happen, and having spent 10 years of my life restoring kelp a decade earlier, I said, gosh, I know how to fix this. We need to act quickly, because this is a different species of kelp up there. We didn't know as much about it as we do the Macrocystis, the giant kelp that lives down here. But I do know that if it's gone for too long, those microscopic spores that settle down on the rocks, if there isn't suitable habitat or there aren't suitable conditions, they can wait for suitable conditions sometimes. But if you go too long, those small little sporophytes or gametophytes at that stage are going to die. And I don't know how long that period is for the bull kelp that's on the North Coast. So I was very concerned, because once you lose the parents, it's hard to make babies.
Then she thought, maybe she ought to work on what was destroying the kelp in the first place, the sea urchin. Caruso started organizing efforts in Northern California to gather and kill urchins. She contacted John Holcomb, the diver of 50 years, and brought him on board. Holcomb already had a commercial urchin harvesting license and spent the summer of 2018 removing sea urchins in Casper Cove in Northern California. He even adapted an underwater vacuum to suck up hundreds of pounds of urchins a day. Here's Holcomb.
We had to make a decision if you're going to try to do something about this or throw your hands up in the air and say, well, it's over, you know, that's it. And I don't think anybody wants to quit, but it's a daunting challenge even to clear one cove. So we went to work in 2018 and removed 50 days worth of urchins, was 35,000 pounds.
You may be wondering whether it's possible to sell or eat urchins to make humans the new predator that might keep the sea urchins in check. In fact, before the kelp forest disappeared, John Holcomb made his living diving for red sea urchins, considered a delicacy by some. Unfortunately, it turns out it's not a profitable venture. Most of the urchins swarming the California coast are the less tasty purple urchins, not the red urchins. And when urchins starve, they consume their own gonads, which is the part that people like to eat. Holcomb says divers can't make money off the empty urchins, so the urchin removal work has been inconsistent due to lack of funding. Still, he says that he wants to continue the work to help the kelp.
How important is kelp? It's real important. Real important. I mean, your ocean's basically toast if we don't get the kelp back. Our coastal fisheries all live one way or another off the kelp. Little fish grow up in the kelp, bigger fish come in and eat them. Bigger fish come in, like salmon and tuna, eat them. And the seals eat them, the seabirds eat them. Kelp flies. Stuff you wouldn't even think about. I mean, that's part of the food chain for the birds.
But if commercial purple urchin fishing isn't taking off anytime soon, maybe there's another way. Relying on recreational divers who want to help. Keith Rootsert is a diver and the founder of the Giant Giant Kelp Restoration Project. And that's exactly what he's trying to do. Rootsert says that he spent years trying to convince the California Fish and Game Commission to let divers cull urchins around Monterey.
We tried it in 2017. They told us no. We tried it in 2019. They said us no. I said no. And then in 2020, I tried it again. I was told no. But this time, I brought everybody. I just brought all the diving community, and everybody wrote letters. And we had like 260 letters to the commissioners. And, you know, we had times when we would go to these meetings and we weren't even on the agenda. We would take an hour of their time at general comments just talking about urchins. And eventually they said yes.
Finally, with the commission's blessing, Rootsert partnered with the ocean restoration group Reef Check to set up a pilot site near Monterey last year. They train recreational divers to go out, find urchins, and smash them with hammers on the spot, like eggs.
We have set up this underwater grid from Reef Check that is 100 meters by 100 meters. So that's pretty good size. It's 2.5 acres, basically. that is being very closely monitored. It has like lanes on it. You can swim down these lanes and call the urchins. And that way we can tell like what the urchin is able to be reduced to by diver efforts. So it's really kind of an experiment to determine if this is something that is a useful tool, right, for combating kelp restoration, you know, make kelp restoration something that in the fish and wildlife repertoire of tools they could use is have recreational divers as part of that solution.
Joshua Smith, the UC Santa Cruz PhD candidate we heard from at the beginning, says that while there are some encouraging results from urchin calling programs, there are also some big caveats.
It's also important to think about that method and the bigger scale of what's going on. So on the north coast of California, it's hundreds of kilometers of coastline that have been deforested, and there's urchins everywhere. And so you can imagine how difficult it would be to really remove enough urchins,
especially one at a time by hand with volunteer divers on oxygen. And clearing a reef of urchins just once won't be enough.
In order for it to be effective, it's a long-term commitment. It's something that has to be done repeatedly for a very long time.
So I had to ask, is there a more permanent solution than going around the seafloor finding and smashing sea urchins? Smith says that this could actually be a problem nature might have to solve for itself. Unfortunately, starving urchins don't die. They go into a state of dormancy and can sit on the ocean floor for years or decades, hungry and empty, waiting for food to return. Still, there are other natural events that might clear them out. And surprisingly, that might look like
an urchin disease. This is something that could be lightning fast. I mean, just like the sea stars were decimated in a single year, the same thing could happen with urchins. And so anytime you have a lot of individuals living in close proximity and warm water together, those are kind of a recipe for disease.
That's right. We may just have to wait for a disease to wipe out the urchins so the kelp can come back. If sea urchin disease is really the best shot we've got, what about all the efforts by divers and scientists? Some of it does seem to be working. A partnership between ReefCheck and commercial fishermen over the last year in Mendocino County cleared out enough urchins to let bull kelp start growing back. At the same time, the basic arithmetic of urchins plus starfish plus heat waves hasn't changed. And conservationists still aren't sure how to scale up from a few acres to an entire continental coastline. Still, Nancy Caruso, for one, isn't planning to stop looking for solutions.
We have to keep trying, right? How many times did we blow up rockets trying to go to the moon? So that's basically the foundation of science is, yeah, we don't see how this is going to work for the entire coast, but maybe we'll find it. And in the meantime, we'll keep plugging away.
Others say maybe the current exploitative relationship to the ocean needs to change from extraction to stewardship. Keith Root said again.
This is not a problem that, you know, we're going to solve and then we'll all pat ourselves on the back and well, that's great. Let's go back to diving now. This is going to become, you know, the new ocean, right? We're going to have to provide ecosystem services to it. It's just how it's going to have to be. This is because this urchin problem is not going to go away on its own. It'll take decades to clear this. To me, it's like something has to be done. And right now, nothing is being done as far as the rest of the state's concerned. Everyone's just watching it and they're counting urchins with their fingers. And I want to count urchins with a hammer. You know, I want to get something done and change everyone's opinion of whether this can be done or not. Let this be a tipping point in California ecological history.
For Root Sarin and many others I spoke to for this story, it is no longer enough for us to just take from the ocean. It may now be our responsibility to actively nurture and maintain it. As climate change progresses, we face a new normal every day. The collapse of the kelp forest happened at the intersection of extreme events. But extreme events are more and more common. pulling apart the delicate web of interactions that make up ecosystems. We don't know how effective these efforts will be in the long run, or whether they can be scaled up to save more than a single cove or beach or small stretch of coast. Either way, the truth is, right now, we're witnessing what happens when something as vast and timeless as the ocean is being so damaged by humans under our watch. For now, when I'm at the beach, I'll be thinking about what's not there and what I'm not seeing just beneath the waves. From the Northern California coast, I'm Scott Baba, Pacifica Radio, KPFA.